has a strong tradition of free speech. People think, oh, China, great firewall. Mainland China does have significant restrictions on free speech, but the people of Hong Kong have a long tradition of protesting in the streets, of making their views known. The internet is not filtered here, no more so than any other Western government. And I believe that the Hong Kong government is actually independent in relation to a lot of other leading Western governments.
If your motive had been to harm the United States and help its enemies, or if your motive had been personal or material gain, were there things that you could have done with these documents to advance those goals that you didn't end up doing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anybody in the positions of access with the technical capabilities that I had could, you know, suck out secrets, pass them on the open market to Russia. You know, they always have an open door, as we do. I had access to, you know, the full rosters of everyone working at the NSA, the entire intelligence community, and undercover assets all around the world, the locations of every station we have, what their missions are, and so forth. If I had just wanted to harm the U.S., you know, that you could shut down the surveillance system in an afternoon. But that's not my intention. And I think for anyone making that argument, they need to think, if they were in my position, and you know, you live a privileged life, you're living in Hawaii in paradise and making a ton of money, what would it take to make you leave everything behind? The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change. People will see in the media all of these disclosures. They'll know the lengths that the government is going to grant themselves powers unilaterally to create greater control over American society and global society. But they won't be willing to take the risks necessarily to stand up and fight to change things, to force their representatives to actually take a stand in their interests. And the months ahead, the years ahead, it's only going to get worse until eventually there will be a time where policies will change, because the only thing that restricts the activities of the surveillance state are policy. Even our agreements with other sovereign governments, we consider that to be a stipulation of policy rather than a stipulation of law. And because of that, a new leader will be elected. They'll flip the switch, say that because of the crisis, because of the dangers that we face in the world, you know, some new and unpredicted threat, we need more authority, we need more power, and there will be nothing the people can do at that point to oppose it, and it'll be turnkey tyranny.
NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, and that concludes tonight's edition of Earthwatch. We welcome your comments with an email to rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T, at WBAI.org. And for Earthwatch, I'm Robert Knight.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Heavy is the beating sound. Justice that comes.
Attention, baseball fans. WBAI has tickets to a Brooklyn Cyclones game on Saturday, July 19th. The game will start at 6 p.m. We have great tickets for 16 people that are located between first base and the right field wall. Each ticket is available to any WBAI supporter for a donation of $25 or more for each ticket. Tickets are available through WBAI.org or by calling 718-788-5263. That number again is 718-788-5263. You can make arrangements to get the tickets by calling the aforementioned number or pick them up at WBAI's administrative office located at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. And thank you once again for supporting WBAI New York Pacifica Radio.
Good morning. This is Half Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. I am on recording. I am at ReaderCon this week and have asked Lister of Burn Baby Burn Clapper to fill in for me. But we're going to have a movie review, a reading, and more stuff. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Earth to Echo is not a good film. This is kind of unfortunate, since the basic premise is strong enough. A group of kids go on one last adventure together and discover an adorable little alien robot that they have to help. Yeah, it's pretty much lifting stuff from E.T., Close Encounters, Stand By Me, and Super 8, but debuting director Dave Green does show glimmers of credibility in how the children interact and some bittersweet emotion in how this tale affects their situation. And the little baby owl-like robot dubbed Echo is certainly cute enough. That's counteracted by scripting that doesn't quite try hard enough. A lot of the film is a scavenger hunt for parts to the robot, where a sequence follows the same pattern of the kids entering some location, the robot levitating a component out of some machine to varying degrees of destruction, and the gang running away. Worse damage is done by the decision to format this as a mockumentary. Actually, it looks as if this was shot as a found footage film, and when the producers discovered that that wasn't going to work, found footage works best when the audience understands the basics of film storytelling, and that's not really the kid market. They created the pretense that one of the kids has fashioned a full-on film out of this footage, which doesn't explain a cutting style that would make Michael Bay twitchy, nor the original orchestral musical score. That kid must be a whiz at GarageBand. A colleague of mine said that 9-year-olds are going to love Earth to Echo, and that's true, and that's not bad. That's justified by the film's merits. But I do hope that Dave Green gets another shot at a film, something a little less gimmicked up, because I've got a feeling that there are skills there that are worth following. So that's that with Earth to Echo. Let's talk about something not completely successful, but more interesting, that came out recently on home video. The Machine is a Welsh-produced modern-day retelling of the Frankenstein story. At a time of worldwide economic collapse, when the West, including presumably Wales, is at war with China, an expert in cybernetics, Vincent, played by Toby Stevens, who's working for a private corporation, brings on an assistant who's created an artificial intelligence sophisticated enough to pass the Turing test. When the assistant, played by Katie Lotz, is killed by Chinese spies, Vincent creates an android body in her image, downloads the AI into it, and dubs the result Machine, winding up with an intellectually and emotionally vulnerable innocent for which the corporation, in the person of its head, played by Dennis Lawson, has sinister designs. The problem here is that director Caradog James doesn't appear to be very clear about his world, the motivation of his characters, or what kind of technological tale he's trying to tell. The corporation keeps a stockpile of wounded but still living soldiers to use as cyborg test material, and those soldiers, some of whom are recruited for security duty around the installation, seem to maintain their personality. But Machine herself is completely android with an artificial intelligence loaded into it, and how that relates to Vincent's secret goal of developing a brain transfer system that will save his dying daughter, I'm not sure. At the same time, director James never quite finds the right balance for Vincent between the amoral scientist who brusquely calls his creation Machine and the loving father who orders her not to kill. Toby Stevens here makes a more convincing and passive tool than he does an empathetic human. The bottom line is the less you try to define the logic of this, the better you'll be. And fortunately, the film does not live or die on its plausibility. For all that Caradog James can't make his world function in a way that completely makes sense, it's still a pretty captivating world to visit. James creates a dark, technology-suffused environment, dramatically lit, with clever deployment of computer-generated effects, particularly a sparking glow to the various cyborg devices that graces them with their own distinctly non-human kind of life. The creation of Machine's android body has an eerie beauty to it, and that's mirrored in a later sequence where Machine tests the boundaries of her freedom by doing a graceful dance outside her laboratory, her body backlit as energy arcs visibly through her limbs. This feels like what Cronenberg would have done if Cronenberg had hung around in genre long enough to take advantage of the latest in CG technology. That, of course, does mean that the film indulges in quite a bit of violence and gore, but it's artful violence and gore, and it fits in well with the environment. And even if the story is a bit of a muddle, it does in some ways take on an issue dear to my heart. When does the simulation of humanity become actual humanity? And it raises some compelling ideas about what will inherit the Earth once the time of us meatbags is done. I was surprised by how affecting the machine was. Flawed or not, it's still a fascinating cybertech tale. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we archive these reviews over at CineFantastique Online, sometimes as standalones, sometimes as part of the Dossier Fantastique podcast. Check it all out at cfqonline.com.
Thank you, Dan Persons. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I should say it's half Hour of the Wolf because it's a highly abbreviated edition. I am currently in Burlington, Massachusetts, attending ReaderCon, which is my favorite science fiction convention. The name sort of says it all. And I get to do panels, and I record a number of readings. There are readings all over the place. I also get to record interviews with writers, and a good time is had by all, and with any luck, you'll be hearing some of those. And in fact, in just a couple of minutes, you're going to hear a reading that I got there almost 5 years ago. But first, here is a lovely little short by Michael Swanwick.
People ask me why I'm such a good storyteller. Well, I ought to be. I learn how from the storyteller Rock himself. The storyteller Rock is as old as the hills, and he started telling stories before there were any ears to hear them with. He invented storytelling. He told the first story that ever was. Over the years, he made up all the stories that ever were or ever will be. He told them all. He told them over and over to himself until they reached their final forms. Every story you've ever heard, he told it first, and he told it best. I met the storyteller Rock when I was a boy in Winooski, Vermont. There was a field out in the woods, and there he sat just a little in from the edge, old and rounded and powdered white with lichens. Down low to one side were three small holes, just big enough to stick your little finger into. If you brought him a cigarette, lit it, and stuck it in the bottommost hole, he'd smoke it down to ash, and then he'd tell you a story. I stole a pack of my mother's Chesterfields from her purse and fed them to him one by one, a story of smoke. When it was gone, I waited my chance and stole another. At first, the storyteller Rock found it hard to focus on me. He had the long view. He kept confusing me with the last kid who gave him tobacco and telling stories in Iroquois. But as the years went by, we got to know each other better, and he taught me a lot. He was a good teacher, but tough. He didn't take any guff. I remember how he said, "Boy, you'll never be a first-rate storyteller until you learn to stop being so goddamn sincere." Well, I listened to him, and now I'm not.
That was Storyteller Rock by Michael Swanwick, read for you by the author. So I mentioned that I am at ReaderCon. This is an abbreviated edition of Hour of the Wolf. And 5 years ago at ReaderCon, I got to interview Robert J. Sawyer from Canada, and he shared with us the first chapter of his new novel at that time, Wake. This is recorded 5 years less 2 days ago.
Wake by Robert J. Sawyer, read by the author. Chapter 1. What a blind person needs is not a teacher, but another self. Helen Keller. Not darkness, for that implies an understanding of light. Not silence, for that suggests a familiarity with sound. Not loneliness, for that requires knowledge of others. But still, faintly, so tenuous that if it were any less, it wouldn't exist at all. Awareness. Nothing more than that, just awareness, a vague, ethereal sense of being. Being, but not becoming. No marking of time, no past or future, only an endless, featureless now. And just barely there, in that boundless moment, inchoate and raw, the dawning of perception. Caitlin had kept a brave face throughout dinner, telling her parents that everything was fine, just peachy. But God, it had been a terrifying day, filled with other students jostling her in the busy corridors, teachers referring to things on blackboards, and doubtless everyone looking at her. She'd never felt self-conscious at the TSB back in Austin, but she was on display now. Did the other girls wear earrings, too? Had these corduroy pants been the right choice? Yes, she loved the feel of the fabric and the sound they made, but here everything was about appearances. She was sitting at her bedroom desk, facing the open window. An evening breeze gently moved her shoulder-length hair, and she heard the outside world. A small dog barking, someone kicking a stone down the quiet residential street, and way off, one of those annoying car alarms. She ran a finger over her watch. 7:49. 7 and 7 squared. The last time today there'd be a sequence like that. She swiveled to face her computer and opened LiveJournal. Subject was easy. First day at the new school. For current location, the default was home. This strange house, hell, this strange country, didn't feel like that, but she let the proffered text stand. For mood, there was a drop-down list, but it took forever for JAWS, the screen-reading software she used, to announce all the choices. She always just typed something in. After a moment's reflection, she settled on confident. She might be scared in real life, but online she was calculus, and calculus knew no fear. As for current music, she hadn't started an MP3 yet, and so she let iTunes pick a song at random from her collection. She got it in 3 notes. Liamodio, Rocking My World. Her index fingers stroked the comforting bumps on the F and J keys, Braille for the masses, while she thought about how to begin. Okay, she typed. Ask me if my new school is noisy and crowded. Go ahead, ask. Why, thank you. Yes, it is noisy and crowded. 1,800 students, and the building is 3 stories tall. Actually, it's 3 stories, S-T-O-R-E-Y-S, tall, this being Canada and all. Hey, how do you find a Canadian in a crowded room? Start stepping on people's feet and wait for someone to apologize to you. Caitlin faced the window again and tried to imagine the setting sun. It creeped her out that people could look in at her. She'd have kept the Venetian blinds down all the time, but Schrodinger liked to stretch out on the sill. First day in 10th grade began with the mum dropping me off and brown girl 4, love ya babe, meeting me at the entrance. I'd walked the empty corridors of the school several times last week, getting my bearings, but it's completely different now that the school is full of kids, so my folks are slipping BG4 $100 a week to escort me to our classes. The school managed to work it out so we're in all but one together. No way I could be in the same French class as her. Je suis un beginner, after all. Her computer chirped, new email. She issued the keyboard command to have JAWS read the message's header. To Caitlin D., the computer announced. She only styled her name like that when posting to newsgroups, so whoever had sent this had gotten her address from NHL Player Stats Discuss or one of the others she frequented. From Gus Hastings. Nobody she knew. Subject, improving your score. She touched a key and JAWS began to read the body of the message. Are you sad about tiny penis? If so, damn. Her spam filter should have intercepted that. She ran her index finger along the refreshable display. Ah, the magic word had been spelled P-E-E-N-I-Z. She deleted the message and was about to go back to LiveJournal when her instant messenger bleeped. Brown Girl 4 is now available, announced the computer. She used Alt-Tab to switch to that window and typed, Hey, Bashira, just updating my LJ. Although she had JAWS configured to use a female voice, it didn't have Bashira's lovely accent. Say nice things about me. Course, Caitlin typed. She and Bashira had been best friends for 2 months now, ever since Caitlin had moved here. She was the same age as Caitlin, 15, and her father worked with Caitlin's dad at PI. Going to mention that Trevor was giving you the eye? Right. She went back to the blogging window and typed, BG4 and I got desks beside each other in homeroom, and she said this guy in the next row was totally checking me out. She paused, unsure how she felt about this, but then added, Go me! She didn't want to use Trevor's real name. Let's give him a code name, because I think he just might figure in future blog entries. How about the hoser? That's Canadian slang, folks. Google it. Anyways, BG4 says the hoser is famous for hitting on new girls in town, and I am, of course, très exotique. Although, I'm not the only American in that class. There's this chick from Boston named, friends, I kid you not, poor thing's name is Sunshine. It is to puke. And she typed the emoticon with a tongue hanging out. Caitlin disliked emoticons. They didn't correspond to real facial expressions for her, and she'd had to memorize the sequence of punctuation marks as if they were a code. She moved back to the instant messenger. So, what you up to? Not much. Helping one of my sisters with homework. Oh, she's calling me. BRB. Caitlin did like chat acronyms. Bashira would be right back, meaning, knowing her, that she was probably gone for at least half an hour. The computer made the door-closing sound that indicated Bashira had logged off. Caitlin returned to Live Journal. Anyway, first period rocked because I am made out of awesome. Can you guess which subject it was? No points if you didn't answer math. And after only one day, I totally own that class. The teacher, let's call him Mr. H, shall we, was amazed that I could do things in my head the other kids need a calculator for. Her computer chirped again. She touched a key and Jaws announced 2CD Dector at an email address without her name attached. Almost certainly spam. She hit delete before the screen reader got any further. After math, it was English. We're doing a boring book about this angsty guy growing up on the plains of Manitoba. It's got wheat in every scene. I asked the teacher, Mrs. Zed, she is, and you could not have picked a more Canadian name, because she's Mrs. Zed, not Mrs. Z, see? If all Canadian literature was like this, and she laughed and said, not all of it. Oh, what a joy English class is going to be. Brown Girl 4 is now available, Jaws said. Caitlin hit Alt-Tab to switch windows, then. That was fast. Yeah, said the synthesized voice. You'd be proud of me. It was an algebra problem, and I had no trouble with it. Be there or be squared, Caitlin typed. Heh-heh. Oh, gotta go. Dad's in one of his moods. See you. Which she'd no doubt typed as the letters C-U. Caitlin went back to her Live Journal. Lunch was okay, but I swear to God, I'll never get used to Canadians. They put vinegar on French fries. And BG4 told me about this thing called poontang. Kidding, friends, kidding. It's poutine. French fries with cheese curds and gravy thrown on top. It's like they use fries as a freaking science lab up here. Guess they don't have much money for real science. Well, except here in Waterloo, of course. And that's mostly private moolah. Her spell checker beeped. She tried again, M-E-W-L-E-H. Another beep. The darn thing knew triskaidekaphobia, like she'd ever need that word. But, oh, maybe it was moolah, M-O-O-L-A-H. No beep. She smiled and went on. Yep, the all-important green stuff. Well, except it's not green up here, I'm told. Apparently it's all different colors. Anyway, a lot of the money to fund the Perimeter Institute, where my dad works on quantum gravity and other shiny stuff like that, comes from Mike Lazaridis, co-founder of Research in Motion, RIM for you crackberry addicts. Mike L's a great guy. They always call him that because there's another Mike, Mike B. And I think my dad is happy here, although it's so blurking hard to tell with him. Her computer chirped yet again, announcing more email. Well, it was time to wrap this up anyway. She had about 8 million blogs to read before bed. After lunch, it was chemistry class, and that looks like it's going to be awesome. I can't wait until we start doing experiments, but if the teacher brings in a plate of fries, I'm out of there. She used the keyboard shortcut to post the entry and then had Jaws read the new email header. To Caitlin Dector, her computer announced, from Masayuki Kuroda. Again, nobody she knew. Subject, a proposition. Involving a rock-hard penis, no doubt. She was about to hit delete when she was distracted by Schrodinger rubbing against her legs, a case of what she liked to call catus interruptus. Who's a good kitty? Caitlin said, reaching down to pet him. Schrodinger jumped into her lap and must have jostled the keyboard or mouse while doing so, because her computer proceeded to read the body of the message. I know a teenage girl must be careful about whom she talks to online. A cyberstalker who knew the difference between who and whom. Amused, she let Jaws continue. So I urge you to immediately tell your parents of this letter. I hope you will consider my request, which is one I do not make lightly. Caitlin shook her head, waiting for the part where he would ask for nude photos. She found the spot on Schrodinger's neck that he liked to have scratched. I have searched through the literature and online to find an ideal candidate for the research my team is doing. My specialty is signal processing related to V1. Caitlin's hand froze in mid-scratch. I have no wish to raise false hopes, and I can make no projection of the likelihood of success until I've examined MRI scans, but I do think there's a fair chance that the technique we have developed may be able to at least partially cure your blindness. And she leapt to her feet, sending Schrodinger to the floor and probably out the door, give you at least some vision in one eye. I'm hoping that at your earliest... Mom! Dad! Come quick! She heard both sets of footfalls, light ones from her mother, who was 5'4" and slim, and much heavier ones from her father, who was 6'2" and developing. She knew from those very rare occasions on which he permitted a hug, a middle age spread. "What's wrong?" Mum asked. Dad, of course, didn't say a word. "Read this letter," Caitlin said, gesturing toward her monitor. "The screen is blank," Mum said. "Oh." Caitlin fumbled for the power switch on the 17-inch LCD, then got out of the way. She could hear her mother sit down and her father take up a position behind the chair. Caitlin sat on the edge of her bed, bouncing impatiently. She wondered if Dad was smiling. She liked to think that he did smile when he was with her. "Oh, my God," Mum said. "Malcolm?"
"Google him," Dad said. "Here, let me."
More shuffling, and Caitlin heard her father settle into the chair. "He's got a Wikipedia entry, his webpage at the University of Tokyo, PhD from Cambridge, and dozens of peer-reviewed papers, including one in Nature Neuroscience on, as he says, signal processing in V1, the primary visual cortex." Caitlin was afraid to get her hopes up. When she'd been little, they'd visited doctor after doctor, but nothing had worked, and she'd resigned herself to a life of, no, not of darkness, but of nothingness. But she was calculus. She was a genius at math and deserved to go to a great university, then work someplace real cool like Google. Even if she managed the former, though, she knew people would say garbage like, "Oh, good for her. She managed to get a degree despite everything," as if the degree were the end, not the beginning. But if she could see, the whole wide world would be hers. "Is what he's saying possible?" her mum asked. Caitlin didn't know if the question was meant for her or her father, nor did she know the answer. But her dad responded, "It doesn't sound impossible," he said, but that was as much of an endorsement as he was willing to give. And then he swiveled the chair, which squeaked a little, and said, "Caitlin?" It was up to her, she knew. She was the one who'd had her hopes raised before, only to be dashed, and no, that wasn't fair, and it wasn't true. Her parents wanted her to have everything. It had been heartbreaking for them, too, when other attempts had failed. She felt her lower lip trembling. She knew what a burden she'd been on them, although they'd never once used that word. But if there was a chance... "I am made out of awesome, my ass," she thought. And then she spoke, her voice small, frightened. I guess it couldn't hurt to write him back. The awareness is unburdened by memory, for when reality seems unchanging, there's nothing to remember. It fades in and out, strong now, and now weak, and strong again, and then almost disappearing, and disappearance is to cease, to end. A ripple, a palpitation, a desire to continue. But the sameness lulls. You've just heard the opening of Wake by Robert J. Sawyer, read by the author.
And thank you, Rob. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, as mentioned several times, an abbreviated edition. I am attending ReaderCon. Burn Baby Burn Clapper is coming your way with Lister in just a couple of minutes, and I will be back live next week. Take care, be good to each other. Good morning.
And you're in tune to Radio Station WBAI, 99.5 FM New York, WBAI.org. It's 2 o'clock. Burn, baby, burn next, yo. Show this morning, Jim Fry. Jim Fry will be back in his regular time slot right here at WBAI 99.5 FM New York. Yeah.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman, host of the Tom Hartman Program. Join me every weekday evening at 5 p.m. for sharp debate, my rants, and some of the finest callers on radio. That's the Tom Hartman Program every weekday evening at 5 p.m. on WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
Everywhere is freaks and Harris, dykes and Ferris. Tell me where it's at.
The Pacifica Foundation is in the process of revising its bylaws, the rules under which the organization must be operated. To read the actual proposed changes, visit www.pacifica.org. The National Board will vote on July 17, 2014, and the five local stations' delegates will vote within 60 days of that date. To be approved, each proposal must receive a majority vote of the Pacifica National Board and of three of the five stations' delegates, aka station board members. For more information, visit www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org.
When I leave, you can come out said with the last words on my lips. I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the
bitch.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torture the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth that's off the way I see it? Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system works to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm no lover of this flag like many others take the same turn like me. They yearn for the flag too. Cause my hurt is internal, the American dream, a nightmare. I want the people to wake up to the lies the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call it fist cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm messy attack. The flag, I ragging and snagging and dragging and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs dribble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
take a trip, but this time not on a slave ship. Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru. Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea. Beirut, can't forget Haiti. Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about uptown Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, east and south central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
Thinking they slick, contradicting their own, taking me for a fool. They sent my man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn. What? Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land of the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why trying to scold me when I toss you the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Rusty, your love is so.
after the hour, 12 minutes after the hour, 12 minutes after 2 o'clock right here. Celebrating Melody Brown's birthday right here. Melody Brown up in a place called Florida. Her favorite artist, Pablo Moses. Before that, HR, Pave the Way, Rasta.
Pave the way, Rasta, pave the way. Pave the way, Rasta, pave the way. In Britain and in USA, in Canada, in Japan, so pave the way. Pave the way, Rasta, pave the way. We all got to play our part in the struggle that is tearing mankind apart. Fight your own little revolutions in your own, yeah, institutions. Show the people of Mount Zion the one and only ever New Jerusalem, the home and the sanctuary for all of Jah's children. Jah's children, come on, pave the way, Rasta, pave the way, pave the way. Rasta, pave the way. In Africa and in Italy, in Australia and in Germany, it's a big pave the way. Rasta, pave the way. Pave the way. Rasta, pave the way.
Sing this song of culture. I miss it singing them songs. singing them songs of culture. I miss it singing them songs of love. I miss it for a word ever and a backward never. For a word ever and a backward never. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. Some for the people to unite. Teaching them not to fight. Manners must turn to discipline. Singing them a songs of love. I miss it for a word ever and a backward never. For a word ever and a backward never. A backward never. A backward never.
This
Lester Hewlett, Patrick Hosley, and Ted Buffalo first got together and made a classical movie called Rockers.
I'm a reggae rocker. Do you love me?
Melody Brown, it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
6 feet tall, straight from Mama Neal. Do you love me?
Melody Brown in Florida, New York. Listen.
Play the music that I love. Do you love me? Vibrations sent from up above.
Joining us, Melody Brown, Augustus Pablo's close friend up in Florida, celebrated her birthday yesterday. So this is the after party of her birthday. Still flag burning season right here at 212-209-2900. Lista on the radio until 5 o'clock, y'all. Thank you, Jim Prine.
He's a rocker, she's a rocker, rocking to my melody.
Melody in Florida, New York. Back in the days when Lister used to run Island Records with Christopher Blackwell, we put out a tune called This. Yo.
Happy
yo.
Family.
Yo. Yo. Yo.
Chatting to creation.
Love that tune, yeah.
Happy family.
Terry
United,
Wilson.
United as one nation.
Your tune.
Movement of Jah. Movement of Jah. Movements of Jah.
prisons in the system of the prisons of the world set on killing individuals of the living. Driven by a force moving past the speed limit. Non-false settle, federal mash with these lyrics. Can't be stopped. The wicked gon' get it when we roll on the block. Think tank one cop. The message in the music is beyond heat hot. It can't be contained. You just gotta let it rock. Heavy vibes, steady, elevated, gated, so we rock worldwide with the knock. Babylon shrine mock. Eyeballs on me, Babylon shrine watch. But I'm moving too fast. Get the system on blast. So, bashing on the gas. Good sits upon stash. Trying to elevate the people. I ain't thinking about cash.
Build up the fire. Make it end.
Lista live on the radio, playing all the reggae music they refuse to play on Imperialist Radio in Imperialist USA. Germany is gonna take the World Cup right here. Burn, baby, burn, 99 Cinco. The Munchen Machine, y'all. 99 Cinco, the Munchen Machine is gonna take the World Cup. The Munchen Machine will beat my favorite tune and beat my favorite team in the land of Che Guevara, where Los Cafres is from. Lisa, congratulations. You're going to Harlem to the medical school. This is for you. 99 Cinco, 212-209-2900. Burn, baby, burn.
can make me turn up the temperature, turn up the temperature, turn up the temperature for your non-stop.
Mr. Mitch Smith.
nanny goat, I go running belly down, Mr. I make your puppy a bit.